ask you a question, and that is, what is in your life's blueprint? Number one in your life's blueprint should be, don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody. Always feel that you count. Always feel that you have worth. And always feel that your life has ultimate significance. Don't be ashamed of your color. Don't be ashamed of your biological features. Somehow you must be able to say in your own lives and really believe it, I am black but beautiful. And believe it in your heart. Secondly, in your life's blueprint, you must have the determination to achieve excellence in your various fields of endeavor. When you discover what you're going to be in life, set out to do it as if God Almighty called you at this particular moment in history to do it. It falls your lot to be a street sweeper. Sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Leontine Price sings before the Metropolitan Opera. And sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. And so from an old slave cabin of Virginia's hills, Booker T. Washington rose up to be one of America's great leaders. He lit a torch in Alabama, and darkness fled in that setting from a poverty-stricken area of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Marian Anderson rose up to be the world's greatest contralto, so that a Toscanini could say that a voice like this comes only once in a century. And Sibelius of Finland could say, my roof is too low for such a voice from crippling circumstances. There came a George Washington Carver to carve for himself an imperishable niche in the annals of science. Then came Joe Louis and Muhammad Ali with our educated fists. All of them came to tell us that we can be somebody. Skin may differ, but affection dwells in black and white the same. And if I were so tall as to reach the pole, or to grasp the ocean at a span, I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. Finally, finally, in your life's blueprint must be a commitment to the eternal principles of beauty, love, and justice. Don't allow anybody to pull you so low as to make you hate them. I close by quoting once more the man that the young lady quoted, Langston Hughes. One day he wrote a poem entitled Mother to Son. Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stad. It's had tacks in it, boards torn up places, but no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you stop now. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find this kind of hard. But I's still going, boy. I's still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair. If you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl, but by all means, keep moving.
Okay, Dr. King. Thank you. we will keep moving.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., also elsewhere in California and Oregon and Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Ohio, New York, Louisiana, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Arkansas, Washington State, Virginia, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, not to mention most of your favorite streaming websites and podcast sites. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Yes, we are still here. Setting aside what you or I may think of the New York Times' reporting these days, Times reporter Eric Lipton made a point over the weekend that is true and will be affecting us, and I suspect you, in the days ahead. Over on Blue Sky, where you can always find me at the Brad blog, he wrote on Saturday, quote, "The pace of news emerging in D.C. right now is really hard to manage. For readers, it is hard to read and track it all. For reporters, it is hard to even remember what story you are working on. We are writing so many at once. And yes, this is intentional," he says. "A flood the zone tactic intended to overwhelm the news media and draw attention away from certain particular worrisome things that might now get missed or less focused on. Personally," Lipton writes, "I can also tell you it is exhausting." And that was over the weekend. That was 2 days before the new guy was sworn into office.
I can confirm.
Fact check, true.
Yes.
And we are just getting started. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
So please do pace yourself out there, as we plan to do as well, or at least as we will try to do. It also means, as the zone is purposely flooded, that it is difficult to tell what matters and what does not matter. We're going to do our best to focus on what does matter, but I suspect we may or may not get that right on any given day. I ask your forgiveness in advance as we try to figure it all out on the fly. Where we get it wrong or right, you can always let us know, and I hope you will, via email to bradcast@bradblog.com, or, as I noted, on social media, where you will find me at most of them at the Brad Blog. Like everyone else, we're just guessing, but doing our best to focus on what matters while hoping to help you and us from going insane or from giving up hope, because that helps no one. It has now been more than 24 hours since Donald Trump was sworn in again as president. I will note off the top that the war in Ukraine is still raging, even though he'd promised over and over again that it would be ended 24 hours after being elected. Not after taking office, but after being elected. Both things are now true. It has been more than 24 hours after each of them, and that war is still raging, and I'm starting to think this guy is a liar. It was also MLK Day yesterday, but since we thought it important to run our 2025 inauguration counter-programming special, which I do hope you listen to, and if you didn't, by the way, it's not too late, and it might be helpful, I suspect, at any time over the next 4 years to do so. If you missed it, you can always download it and listen for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you kind enough to donate to our efforts there. But since we ran that special program on Monday, we didn't get to properly honor MLK, even by simply taking the day off, as we try to do sometimes. Hopefully, our long, cold opening there at the top of the show for Martin Luther King's blueprint speech to a group of students in Philadelphia in 1967 helps to make up for that somewhat. So welcome to the Bradcast. Today, the day after a felon, an adjudicated rapist, and an adjudicated insurrectionist, all the same guy, by the way, after he was able to overcome all of that to become the president of the United States, again, with the help of dozens of billionaires who stood behind him, literally, as he took his oath of office on Monday. The day after that inauguration, appropriately enough, marks 15 years since an already corrupted U.S. Supreme Court back in 2010 issued its corrupt Citizens United ruling, essentially allowing those billionaires to buy a U.S. president, allowing billionaires like Elon Musk, the richest man on earth, to invest as much as he might like in American elections, because somehow the more money you have, the more so-called free speech that you get to enjoy, according to the Supremes. In Musk's case, it was a quarter of $1 billion of free speech, if you don't count the $44 billion that he spent to buy Twitter and turn it into a pro-hate, pro-Trump media outlet, and to buy the U.S. government and elect an American president, who subsequently installed Elon Musk into a top role at the administration, albeit in an imaginary unlawful job, according to a number of lawsuits that have already been filed against the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, office, that doesn't actually have any official powers whatsoever. But unlawful or not, who's going to enforce it? All the president's corrupt men and women? In 2024, those billionaires that stood behind Trump, literally as he was sworn in for a second term on Monday, bought the American government, the parts that they had not already been able to capture. In 2025 and beyond, we, the non-billionaires, will continue to pay the price for that corrupt 2010 ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court 15 years ago this week. And their subsequent ruling in July of last year, declaring that that presidents are no longer beholden to the rule of law. They may commit virtually any crime that they like while in office, and they cannot even be questioned for it, much less prosecuted for it, ever in any court of law. And while their staffers, while a president's staffers, in theory, are not allowed the same criminal immunity, in theory, with the plenary, unquestionable constitutional pardon power of the presidency, there is no longer anything in place to prevent a president from A, committing crimes, B, ordering those under him to carry out those crimes, along with C, a promise for a pardon for any crimes that those people may commit at the president's direction. Unless I'm wrong about that and somehow missing something that would prevent an entirely unlawful administration presidency as I have just described it, well, if I've missed anything, let me know via bradcast@bradblog.com, because I would love to know what I missed. Welcome to a lawless America, literally. At least at the top of the U.S. government, where our founders had established a nation where there would be no king, only to see a corrupt process and a corrupt high court, nearly 250 years later, turn that idea on its head to install an untouchable king to rule over the U.S. for the first time since its creation. This is how democracies die. So it's now up to us to fight to not only keep it alive, but to restore it. Because no, I don't think that, as some have argued, America is over. Not yet. Not yet, anyway. And not on my watch, if I can help it. Make no mistake, it will not be easy. And Donald Trump did on the very first night of his second term in office. What he did is likely to make that even more difficult, as he has now, well, he now has a violent paramilitary that he can call on or not call on, since they already know what they should do whenever he needs to enforce his political will with, yes, political violence. In his best-selling 2017 book on tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century, historian Timothy Snyder, in lesson number 6, writes, "Be wary of paramilitaries. When the men with guns, who have always claimed to be against the system, start wearing uniforms and marching with torches and pictures of a leader, the end is nigh. When the pro-leader paramilitary and the official police and military intermingle, the end has come, warns Snyder. I'm hoping the end has not come, as I've heard from many suggesting in recent days, even if it may be nigh. After what Trump did on Monday night in seemingly direct contradiction of what his own vice president, J.D. Vance, told Shannon Bream of Fox News just over 1 week ago.
January 6th pardons, President Trump says there's a process. Where is the line drawn on who will and wouldn't be considered for a pardon?
I think it's very simple. Look, if you protested peacefully on January the 6th and you've had Merrick Garland's Department of Justice treat you like a gang member, you should be pardoned. If you committed violence on that day, obviously, you shouldn't be pardoned. And there's a little bit of a gray area there, but we're very much committed to seeing the equal administration of law. And there are a lot of people, we think, in the wake of January the 6th who were prosecuted unfairly. We need to rectify that.
If you committed violence on that day, obviously, you shouldn't be pardoned. Well, I guess a lot of people were treated unfairly and by a lot. Apparently, he means all of them. And apparently that is true whether they committed violence or not, as now Vice President Vance was sent out, you know, to lie about to Fox News just over 1 week ago. Obviously, if you committed violence on that day, you shouldn't be pardoned. On Monday night, his very first day in office, Donald Trump issued blanket pardons to some 1,500 January 6 felons that do not distinguish between defendants who committed violent or nonviolent offenses during the insurrection that Donald Trump incited to try and steal the 2020 election. He also commuted the sentences of 14 of his supporters in connection with the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, when thousands of them stormed the building amid his false claims that 2020 was rigged against him. Trump commuted the sentences of individuals associated with the paramilitary group Proud Boys and Oath Keepers who were convicted of seditious conspiracy, that is, committing sedition against the U.S. government. Yes, trying to overthrow the U.S. government. Yes, treason. The one crime that is cited in the U.S. Constitution where it calls for the death penalty for those who may commit it. Trump then issued, quote, a full, complete, and unconditional pardon to all other individuals convicted of offenses related to events that occurred at or near the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. The category that included people who assaulted law enforcement officers. Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio, who was serving 22 years in federal prison for sedition for seditious conspiracy. Joseph Biggs, a Proud Boys leader who was sentenced to 17 years behind bars. Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the far-right Oath Keepers, and one-time guest on this program, by the way. He had been sentenced to 18 years in prison. All of them were released today with their commuted sentences. It means that at least I think they remain felons like Donald Trump himself, but they will no longer have to serve any sentence for their attempts to overthrow the American government on Donald Trump's behalf. Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, who was Speaker of the House during the attack, called Trump's actions, quote, an outrageous insult to our justice system and the law enforcement officers who protected the Capitol that day. Quote, it is shameful that the president has decided to make one of his top priorities the abandonment and betrayal of police officers who put their lives on the line to stop an attempt to subvert the peaceful transfer of power, she said in the statement. Immediately after the January 6 attack, Trump sought to distance himself from it, saying that those who broke the law should be held accountable. But over the next few years, Trump began openly signaling that his support for January 6 rioters might lead to a pardon. He called them, quote, hostages, despite the fact that they all received all the protections of our justice system, like trials and appeals and lawyers, etc. No, they were not hostages. The unprecedented attack on the Capitol when the peaceful transfer of power was interrupted was one of the most significant moments in American history. It resulted in the largest FBI investigation ever, with criminal charges against more than 1,500 people and criminal convictions against more than 1,100 defendants. Convictions. Many low-level riot defendants were sentenced to probationary periods or have been convicted of misdemeanor offenses. But hundreds of others who committed very serious felonies like assaulting police officers with deadly or dangerous weapons got significant prison sentences. At the time, Trump issued pardons, according to NBC's Ryan Riley, who, by the way, deserves awards for his investigative coverage over the past 4 years, helping to identify many of these violent criminals. At the time that Trump issued the pardons, there were about 700 defendants who either never received prison sentences or had already completed their sentences, meaning pardons or commutations would have little actual practical effect on impact on them, beyond restoring voting rights and, yes, gun rights for those who were convicted of felonies and subsequently pardoned for them on Monday night. But more than 600 people were sentenced to incarceration. Nonetheless, only a small fraction of them were still behind bars as of yesterday. Many of those who were in the custody of the Federal Bureau of Prisons were convicted of very violent attacks on police officers protecting the Capitol during the assault in which January 6 defendants were armed. Yes, they were armed, as Riley notes, and he links to the cases where these weapons were used. They were armed with firearms. Yes, firearms, stun guns, flagpoles, fire extinguishers, bike racks, batons, a metal whip, office furniture, pepper spray, bear spray, a tomahawk axe, a hatchet, a hockey stick, knuckle gloves, a baseball bat, a massive Trump billboard, Trump flags, a pitchfork, pieces of lumber, crutches, and even an explosive device. Now, if you didn't know that, because Republicans, including Trump, have been lying over and over and over again that these people were completely unarmed, they were totally peaceful, they were just like tourists. Well, now you know better. They were armed, they were dangerous, and they used those dangerous arms to violently assault members of law enforcement. They are, in many cases, would-be cop killers that Republicans pretend to abhor, at least when the would-be cop killers aren't largely white Republicans fighting to steal an election on their behalf. So if you didn't know that, well, now you do. And if your friend or your coworker or your wife or your husband or your girlfriend or your boyfriend did not know that, well, I hope that you will let them know, because we all have a part to play right now, all of us. If we are going to survive this mess, we must all play our parts. Yes, including you. Let them know. Let them know who just got pardoned. Let them know that would-be cop killers, armed in many cases with all sorts of deadly weapons, have now been freed by the new president. And let them know that, particularly if they voted for this monster. More than 140 police officers were injured and or hospitalized. Several died that day or in the days that followed. An attorney who worked on January 6 cases as a federal prosecutor told NBC News that it was always possible that Trump would return to power and pardon Capitol riot defendants, but that the Justice Department, quote, pressed ahead anyway because, quote, political considerations should not play any part in the Justice Department's evaluation of facts and law, which showed that these were crimes, some of them terribly serious crimes that warranted prosecution. And I would note, many of them were caught on videotape. The source said that they suspected many of their colleagues, quote, have no regrets about having pursued the cases and that the effort remains highly consequential because it created, quote, a definitive public, factual record of what actually transpired on January 6th. Riley's source continued, quote, "These cases assured police officers and civilians who were assaulted at the Capitol that there were people and there was a Department of Justice who recognized that they endured and sacrificed. These cases led to hundreds of defendants acknowledging their crimes by pleading guilty in open court and hundreds of others being found guilty at trial," the source said. "The work is likely to be terminated before it can be fully completed, but," he notes, or they note, "the record stands." Indeed, on Monday, several cases that were still ongoing in the January 6th, several January 6th defendants, including one whose trial was underway on Monday, well, that was all abruptly and corruptly ended by Trump's Justice Department without even coming to completion. Even before we found out whether they were guilty or not, it was just ordered to be shut down, and those cases were shut down. Sergeant Gunnell, one of the cops who was assaulted on January 6th, who testified against a number of those imprisoned, afterwards sent a photo of his cell phone call log today to Harry Dunn, another one of the Capitol Police who testified as to what happened on January 6th. The screen captures show about 10 automated calls from the Department of Justice between 7 a.m. and 10 a.m. today, each one of them an automated notification that, quote, "the defendant you testified against is being released from the Department of Corrections." A warning. Each of those defendants, Dunn notes, assaulted Gunnell. And now they're free. Free, I suspect, to exact revenge, if they wish, against those who testified against them or reported them to law enforcement in the first place as part of the largest criminal roundup in American history. So, yeah, Donald Trump now has his paramilitary.
He has released domestic terrorists back into the country, and all of those people who testified against them or turned them in, all of those people, Trump has put a target on their backs.
And those terrorists are now, well, grateful to Donald Trump, I suspect. He's got a paramilitary now whenever he needs them, and there's no limit on his pardon power for them. Trump's mass pardons of the January 6th criminals, who Republicans had pretended would be dealt with on a case-by-case basis, we shall see, well, they are all pardoned. Quote, "full, complete, and unconditional pardons." On Monday, Trump also signed scores of executive orders, declarations, memorandums, some with more publicity value than actual effect, some with potential effect, but challenges filed against them already in courts of law around the country. Trump signed an executive order declaring a national emergency at the southern border, though there is no national there's no emergency at all at the southern border. And border crossings are, in fact, lower than they were under Trump's first term. Under an official declared emergency, however, he believes he'll be able to deploy elements of the military, because an emergency, and he thinks he'll be able to deploy them both at the border and, yes, in your hometown. His promised roundup, arrest, detention, and expulsion of theoretically undocumented immigrants, many here legally awaiting asylum hearings, well, that is expected to begin any time at this hour. Reportedly, he has already approved rounding them up near schools, near churches, perhaps when they're coming to pick up their children from school, or maybe when they're going to church on Sunday. And spoiler alert, it's going to be difficult and painful and ugly, and it will break up families, and it will include people who have been here for years, decades, legally. Just like the last time he was in office, in case you forgot, and apparently a lot of Americans did. But this time, it is likely to be worse and more aggressive. Hopefully, however, the Trump administration will be just as bad at it as they were last time. And it will bring even more shame on his administration in the bargain, but we will see. It looks in many cases like our friend Mark Joseph Stern over at Slate has noted that some of these executive orders were put together with the use of artificial intelligence. In other words, Mark suggested that it does not look like humans wrote much of this. It was so poorly written, at least not humans who are older than fifth or sixth grade. But we'll see what stands and what does not. Trump signed an executive order claiming to end the 14th Amendment's constitutional birthright citizenship. If you are born here, no matter where your parents are from, whether they are citizens or not citizens, whether they are documented or undocumented, if you are born here, you are an American citizen. That has been the case since the 14th Amendment was adopted to the U.S. Constitution after the Civil War, and it has been upheld time and again by the courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court. Although it's been a while since the U.S. Supreme Court has had something to say about it. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment also says that insurrectionists like Donald Trump may not serve in public office, but as you remember, this corrupt court found a way around that as well by making up something that isn't in the Constitution in order to allow Trump to run for a second term, despite the very clear words of the 14th Amendment, Section 3, even after he was adjudicated as an insurrectionist who should be barred from public office. So who knows what the U.S. Supreme Court will do? Trump also falsely claimed that the U.S. is the only country in the world with birthright citizenship, which is a lie. Many countries have it, including Mexico and Canada, by the way. They both have it. As historian Timothy Snyder reminded us on Blue Sky yesterday, when it comes to many of Trump's executive orders, he can say whatever he wants in those orders. But in fact, as Snyder notes, quote, a president's executive order cannot undo a law or a Supreme Court decision, let alone a provision of the Constitution. Forget that, he writes, and you do have a dictatorship on day one. The best that Trump's executive orders can do is roll back an executive order from a previous administration, a previous president, for example, or create new orders for the executive branch that do not conflict with existing laws or, of course, the Constitution. More than a dozen state attorneys general have now reportedly already filed a suit against Trump's attempt to rewrite the Constitution with an executive order to rewrite the Constitution on birthright citizenship, as we go to air today. Trump is once again quitting the Paris Climate Accords, which Desi Doyen will have more about in our latest Green News report later this hour. And he has also signed a so-called national energy emergency. Which, as she will also explain, is not actually a real thing. He made it up in hopes of allowing fossil fuel companies to do more drilling and mining on public lands. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. It's totally about plundering the environment.
That, by the way, even though the nation is already extracting a record amount of fossil fuels right now, even as we speak, even more than they were during the Trump administration, which is why gas prices are about what they were under Trump, lower, in fact, than before the pandemic. After he signed this so-called national energy emergency, he said, quote, "That means you can do whatever you have to do to get out of that problem. And we have to do that kind of an emergency."
So coherent.
So he's both an idiot and he's wrong. Unless the Supreme Court wants to play along, of course, and pretend that there is such a thing as a national energy emergency. Trump signed an executive order withdrawing from the World Health Organization. Trump has revoked Joe Biden's landmark executive order on artificial intelligence. The broad order that Biden signed in late 2023 was aimed at addressing risks around the rapidly expanding technology. It called for several safety measures, including federal guidelines for American companies that make AI to make AI content to watermark it, to make sure that it is clear that it is not made by a human, that it's made by AI. It also added funding for AI research and a federal AI hiring surge. But Trump has now revoked that. AI safety advocates had praised Biden's order, by and large. Republicans and right-wing lobbyists, however, opposed it for its regulation of AI companies. They're opposed to any regulation, I guess, particularly their use of massive amounts of computing power, which, yes, uses massive amounts of energy. Trump signed an executive order described as, quote, protecting women from radical gender ideology. Oh, thank you, Mr. President. Proclaiming that the U.S. government will recognize only two immutable sexes, male and female, and they're to be defined based on whether people are born with eggs or sperm, not based on their chromosomes, interestingly enough, because, well, judging by chromosomes might get in the way of their hate campaign against transgender people. What, y'all couldn't find any gypsies to start persecuting? A senior White House official said the gender order was part of a policy, quote, defending women from gender ideology extremism and restoring biological truth to the federal government. And if there's anything this federal government cares about, of course, it is the truth. A separate order halts, quote, radical and wasteful diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI programs inside federal agencies, because which one is worse, diversity, equity, or inclusion? I don't know. Got to get rid of all of them, I guess. They sound terrible. There is more, though, as I said, much of it is only for show. Much of it will be challenged in the courts. We're trying to stay focused. Don't be dispirited by the amount of noise that these people are making. That is what they are hoping. They are hoping to dispirit you. They are hoping you will turn away in frustration and sadness. None of this is a surprise. Much of it is, in fact, what a plurality, not a majority, but a plurality of Americans voted for, whether they knew it at the time or not, given how much disinformation that they were given before the election by the billionaires standing proudly behind Donald Trump as he took the oath of office on Monday, 15 years after Citizens United. This is all, as the administration has described it, a, quote, shock and awe strategy. But I suspect many of the Americans who voted for Trump are soon likely to be shocked and appalled in the days ahead with how all of this plays out. And oh yeah, Trump is also trying to make it harder for voters to vote against all of this in 2026. So let's all enjoy for the moment being in the out crowd for a while as we take a quick break here, and we will return with a couple of Trump's election-related orders next. I'm Brad Friedman. This is still the Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
I'm in with the out crowd. I'm in with the out crowd.
Yes, I am. And there's no place I would rather be. In with the out crowd. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com.
Especially considering the in crowd here that we're talking about.
Yes, exactly right. Thank you, by the way, KCP, for that excellent selection today. And so where was I? Just to make sure that it's more difficult for the American people to respond and push back against this tidal wave of right-wing big government mandates that I just walked through in the A block. A number of the executive orders and actions that were signed by Trump on his first day in office on Monday are meant to try and make it more difficult for voters to vote those Republicans out of office. Trump revoked a 2021 executive order by former President Joe Biden that calls for federal agencies to promote voting access and expand voter registration. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? The order, Biden's order, Executive Order 14019, had expanded access to voting and accurate election information in many ways, like allowing federal agencies to share data with states that seek to establish automatic voter registration efforts and making federal workers and resources available to assist at polling locations when needed, like, say, in the middle of a pandemic. GOP officials claimed with no evidence that through this order, the Biden administration overstepped its authority and was trying to generate more Democratic voters. Federal laws, however, ban federal employees from favoring one political party over another when promoting voter registration. And though they tried to block Biden's original order in court, all of those efforts failed. At least the ones that, you know, ended up going through. And the now rescinded order covered longstanding federal agencies' voter registration efforts that are authorized under federal laws. That's why the courts threw out these challenges, including the State Department, the Defense Department, helping eligible military members and other U.S. citizens living abroad to vote.
Horror.
I know. So Trump cannot rescind any law with an executive order. He can only overturn, for example, Biden's executive order. In August last year, 9 Republican states sued over the Biden order, but November 15, after Trump won the 2024 election, those Republican plaintiffs asked the court to pause the case until February or until Trump rescinded the executive order, which he has now done. Essentially, they decided that their case wouldn't be necessary because they knew that Trump would likely revoke the order once he entered office, and they were correct. Biden's order, however, led to new voter registration guides, mailers, updated websites, programs like the Veterans Affairs facilities in Kentucky and Michigan distributing and helping eligible voters to fill out registration forms. So that's what Republicans and Donald Trump oppose. Basically, democracy. Given their unpopular positions, policy positions, and make no mistake, despite Trump's election, most of Trump's and the Republican Party's positions are unpopular with the American people. Based on that, really, who can blame them? By the way, as a felon, it's unclear that Donald Trump himself will be lawfully allowed to vote in Florida from here on out, though I strongly oppose that. Even as a convicted felon, Donald Trump should be able to vote, and I suspect they'll find a way that he will.
Exactly.
Another one of the dozens of Biden-era executive orders that Trump revoked on Monday was one that had reversed the first Trump administration's unprecedented policy of altering key data from census results. As NPR reports, since the first U.S. census back in 1790, no resident has ever been omitted from census numbers because of their immigration status. And after the Civil War, the 14th Amendment called for the population counts that determine each state's share of U.S. House seats and electoral college votes to include the, quote, whole number of persons in each state. Not whole number of citizens, but the whole number of persons in each state. That is what is supposed to be counted in the census according to the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment.
And that's really important because that's how you allocate resources for the size of roads that you need or fire departments or teachers. It doesn't matter if they're citizens. It's the whole people that you have to prepare
for. Well, because as it turns out, all persons, whether they are citizens or not, who live in those states, yes, they all use the same roads. They go to the same hospitals. They drink the same water. They use the same infrastructure. And they need the same amount of support for those systems and institutions from the federal government. Biden's now revoked 2021 order affirmed the longstanding practice of including the total number of persons residing in each state in those census results. Biden's order, now overturned by Trump, was issued in response to Trump's attempt during his first term during the national census in 2020 to exclude millions of U.S. residents without legal status to try to exclude them from the count for the first time in American history. That effort began with a failed push, as you may recall, to add a citizenship question to census questionnaires, which the U.S. Supreme Court, surprisingly enough at the time, blocked from the 2020 forms. Biden's order that was overturned also effectively ended a Trump administration project at the Census Bureau to produce neighborhood block level citizenship data using government records. That data, a GOP redistricting strategist had concluded, as was revealed during the trial, could be, quote, advantageous to Republicans and non-Hispanic whites when voting districts are redrawn. So, yeah, the Census Bureau was hoping to use this data for political advantage. Never before done. In his new order, Trump said revoking Biden's order, quote, will be the first of many steps the United States federal government will take to repair our institutions and our economy. This order, of course, has nothing to do with either of those things. Right-wing groups behind the Project 2025 plan have included adding a citizenship question among their priorities for the new Trump administration. So, yes, they're going to try again. And Republican members of Congress have introduced bills that call for using the next census to tally non-U.S. citizens living in the country and then subtract some or all of those residents from congressional apportionment counts. That would be the number of seats, essentially, that each state has in the U.S. House and the number of electoral votes that each state enjoys in presidential elections. So you see why they're doing all of this. Trump's second term, thankfully, is set to end before final decisions have to be made on what questions the 2030 census will actually ask and who ends up getting included in the apportionment contest. I hope you will keep that in mind come 2028 in the next presidential election. Because, yeah, that one will also affect all that come after it, because the next president will, in fact, have a say in what the U.S. Census Bureau does in the 2030 count. Though it had an opportunity during the first Trump administration, the Supreme Court has yet to rule on whether the president can actually exclude people who are in the country without legal status from the tally that determines political power in the U.S. I suspect the new Trump administration is hoping to do exactly that before the next census, to get that ruling from the Supreme Court. And frankly, now they have a corrupt enough Supreme Court that it would not surprise me at all if they did that. We shall see. The Supreme Court is set to get more and more corrupt in the Trump years ahead. Let's take a quick break here, and Desi Doyen will have our latest Green News report on the environmental destruction that Trump is already unleashing against Americans as we continue with coverage of his day one assault on the American people here on day two. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. So he didn't even wait until after day one.
No.
On day one, Trump's destruction of the environment is already underway.
Oh, yeah. And he's copied right out of the Project 2025 playbook.
Well, he wasted no time, and neither will we. Let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
We're not going to do the wind thing. Wind.
Donald Trump, at his inauguration, pledges to reverse U.S. climate policy, even as...
This Arctic air mass has made its way down to the Gulf Coast as we watch a developing winter storm, rare for this part of the country. In Southern California, red flag warnings posted for the potential for wind gusts as high as 100 miles per hour.
Americans coast to coast grapple with climate-intensified extreme weather disasters. Plus,
the next item here is the withdrawal from the Paris Climate Treaty.
Trump announces withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accord again.
All of those recurring nightmares and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Big ugly windmills, they ruin your neighborhood.
You know what else ruins your neighborhood? Why don't you ask the folks in Pacific Palisades and Altadena about that? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, here we go again.
Yes, we do. On Monday, while Republican climate change denier Donald Trump was inaugurated as the 47th president of the United States, more than 200 million Americans were facing yet another incursion of the Arctic polar vortex, bringing dangerously frigid temperatures and unusual snowfall as far south as Florida and the Gulf Coast. Such outbreaks of the polar vortex used to be rare, but now they occur far more frequently, linked to man-made climate change altering the jet stream.
Or it's just a complete coincidence, and who knows why it happens.
Also during Trump's inauguration, Americans in Southern California grappled with yet another round of extremely dangerous fire weather, hurricane-force winds, and extreme dryness that ignited the deadly catastrophic fires in Los Angeles just a few weeks ago. Such extreme wildfires and fire weather used to be rare, but now studies show the most destructive wildfires have more than doubled in frequency and intensity over the past 20 years, also linked to man-made climate change.
Or just a coincidence, and nobody knows why.
Although heroic firefighters in L.A. have gained ground in containing the biggest blazes, in his inauguration speech, Trump lied about and insulted their efforts.
Our country can no longer deliver basic services in times of emergency, as Los Angeles, where we are watching fires still tragically burn, from weeks ago without even a token of defense.
That token of defense kept my home from burning down, sir.
On his first day in office, Trump took sweeping actions to roll back environmental protections, signing a blitz of new orders, undoing Biden-era policies that cut air and water pollution and address climate change while boosting climate-warming fossil fuels.
Today, I will also declare a national energy emergency. We will drill, baby, drill.
And of course, there is no energy emergency. That is not a thing. The U.S. is not facing a fuel shortage and currently produces more oil and gas than any other country at any point in history. Retail gas prices have returned to pre-pandemic levels. Trump also directed agencies to reverse President Biden's restrictions on oil and gas development in pristine regions of Alaska. Trump also attacked the U.S. offshore wind industry, halting new offshore wind permits in U.S. coastal waters.
So it doesn't mess up his golf course views.
And ordering the Interior Department to study ways to legally terminate existing leases and projects already under construction.
Can't have enough golf courses.
Trump also ordered agencies to reverse appliance energy and water efficiency standards that save Americans money. And he pledged to reverse President Biden's suite of policies that reduce toxic tailpipe air pollution and emissions, but major electric vehicle incentives for manufacturers and consumers and federal emissions and pollution standards can't be rolled back by executive order.
Is that the so-called EV mandate that he keeps pretending exists?
Who knows? And finally, with 2024 clocking in as the hottest year ever recorded, Trump again ordered the withdrawal of the United States from the historic voluntary global Paris Paris Climate Agreement for the second time. The U.S. now joins Iran, Libya, and Yemen as the only countries in the world not in the agreement. However, Lawrence Tubiana, a key architect of the Paris Accord, told AP that action to slow climate change is now, quote, stronger than any single country's politics and policies. The global market for clean energy technologies is projected to triple in coming years. Tubiana says, quote, there is unstoppable economic momentum behind the global transition, which the U.S. has gained from and led, but now risks forfeiting.
In addition to destroying the planet, pulling out of the Paris Agreement is going to cost America a fortune. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You come again, just when I've begun to get myself to.
Yeah, here he comes again. Two quick things here, Des. One, the winds in Southern California that look like they're abating now for the moment again. And
so far, so good.
So far, so good.
There have been some fires, but the firefighters have been able to knock them down fast.
And speaking of wind, Donald Trump is calling for expanding energy of all sorts, right? Except, why not? But not wind? Isn't that energy? Doesn't that count?
Yes, but not in Donald Trump's world. It's a blatantly incoherent executive order that he has put forth about, you know, he declares the national energy emergency because we've got to unleash American energy production and reduce regulations and bureaucratic overreach. And then that is exactly what he does with this stupid, you know, wind energy halt to all permitting, and also an attempt to try to undo permits that have already been approved, and also wind energy projects that are already under construction. It's the exact opposite of unleashing American-produced energy.
If it's a national energy emergency that isn't a real thing, then we need more energy, including wind. But as I said, yeah, it's as golf courses.
Yeah, he just hates wind energy, and it's
because he was one time he was against it, so now he's got to be against it for the rest of his life.
Right, it's completely incoherent.
Shocking. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other we've ever done since the beginning of time, you can download it for free at bradblog.com. Hey, while you're over there, please consider hitting one of those donate buttons or signing up for a subscription, a monthly subscription of any amount you like. That's the only way we can stay on your public airwaves is with your support. Thank you in advance. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com and on the Facebooks, Mastodons, Twitters, and yes, the Blue Skies, you will find me at the Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.